We have two more wonderful readings. The richness of the liturgy sometimes surprises me. I don't know why. But before we get to the readings, I want to pause for a moment on today's saint, Saint Anthony of the Desert, Saint Anthony, the father of the hermits. He's an interesting figure because he is earlier than most of the big figures that we know from 4th century. I've said this many times, that in the 4th century there was this great flowering of sanctity, because after the Edict of Constantine there was freedom for the church, and then these great saints rose up. So St. Athanasius, St. Ambrose, St. Augustine, and many others. St. Jerome, some of these great doctors of the church. But St. Anthony was before that. He was born in the middle of the 3rd century. So by the time those terrible persecutions at the end of the 3rd, early 4th century came along, he was a middle-aged man. He was in his 50s when Diocletian became the emperor. And he was a well-known holy man in the desert. How he escaped the persecution, I don't know. I'd love to know more about his story. I probably should know, but I don't. The thing is, he was a holy man who was not a martyr. And this was kind of unusual. In the early church, those who were acclaimed as holy were the ones who were killed for the faith, and there were many of them. Then the question became, well, after the age of martyrdom was over and there were no more violent or fewer violent persecutions, how could you be holy? Well, people started to point to Anthony, who was by that time an old man. He was a big influence on Athanasius, and Athanasius wrote a biography. It's one of the first examples we have of the lives of the saints. He wrote the life of Anthony, and it became a kind of bestseller for those days. I mean, in those days, books were handwritten and hand-copied, so you could hardly get very many copies, but insofar as it was possible, it became a real bestseller. Influenced lots and lots of people, including St. Augustine. And his own conversion is connected to the reading or hearing about people who read about St. Anthony. So there's this kind of chain reaction. So today's saint has had an enormous impact on the church from his own lifetime up until today. I know many people have great devotion to San Antonio. That's not this one. That San Antonio is San Antonio de Padua. But this is St. Anthony, the hermit, or the abbot. Now, in light of that, I'd just like to point out something that Father Francis appreciated so deeply, and that is the arrangement of, how could I say, the whole of holiness. There's, of course, at the center, Jesus Christ. You just look at the icon, Jesus Christ, and he's at the center of the liturgy. Then there's Mary, who is enshrining the mysteries of Jesus. And then there's, around the outer circle, there's the months, and you could say the people on the edges, those are the saints. And Father Francis loved to compare this to the solar system. The sun is at the center. The moon reflects the light of the sun to the earth. The moon represents, in some way, the sun to the earth in dark times. That's the role of Mary. Mary's the one magnifying the Lord, reflecting the Lord. And then there's the planets and the stars, and they represent the saints. So the liturgy has these three cycles. This the central cycle, the dominical cycle, they call it, the Sundays, the mysteries of Jesus Christ. That's the center of the whole liturgical year. And then there's the many, many feast days of Mary, the Mariological or Marian cycle, and then there's the sanctoral cycle, all the saints. And the saints have a role to play in leading us into the mystery of Jesus Christ. St. Anthony is today's example. And we don't ask, when it comes to the solar system, when it comes to the cosmos, we don't say, why do we need planets and stars if we have the sun and the moon? We say, well, it's beautiful. Of course, you can't see any of them in Manila, but it's beautiful to have stars and planets as part of the beauty of the cosmos. And Father Francis called this the cosmic analogy, a name which kind of turned people off. I know Sister Barbara hated the name cosmic analogy, but that's what Father Francis called it. And it's much simpler than that name indicates. It's just a comparison. Jesus is the sun, Mary the moon, and the saints are the stars and the planets. Saints and angels. Okay. So St. Anthony is a hero. In today's first reading, we get another hero story, another inspiring hero story. This is young David taking up his stance against this Philistine, this giant Philistine, this warrior Philistine, who has taunted the Israelite army and challenged them. His name is not mentioned in this reading, but we know he's Goliath, Goliath of Gath, the giant. He says, you pick a man, and the two of us will fight, and whoever wins, wins for his whole side. And everybody on the Israelite side, Saul's army, is afraid to stand up to this guy. He's obviously a powerful warrior, and who wants to take him on in a hand-to-hand battle? David stands up, and he's a, remember, young shepherd boy, who just happens to be there. I think he came to bring some stuff to his brothers or something like that. He was a nobody. He was not a trained warrior. He had no equipment. He's a shepherd. Now, we don't get all the details. We just get some of the highlights of the story. But he stands up and says, I can do it because I know that the Lord is on the side of his people. And this guy has insulted the Lord and the Lord's chosen people. So he deserves to be defeated. It's a classic story of the little guy who beats the powerful enemy. The kind of, what's the name of that? There's a term for that. Underdog. The underdog. Yeah. I know. Just went out of my mind for a moment. So the underdog, classic underdog story. And there's many stories like this in literature and in movies. You know, the team that's in last place beats the champion, or the loser who stands up and wins, the lowest person in the mailroom saves the corporation, and all this kind of stuff. We love that kind of story because it gives hope to us who are facing seemingly impossible odds and huge enemies, and there's no way we can defeat them, and yet we read these stories or we see these movies and we say, or we read about this David, we say, well, it's really possible for the little guy to win. It's not always the big bad guys who win all the time. And even in politics, this is how political upstarts come along and say, well, I know the established political system is this way and it's corrupt and powerful and no one can defeat them, but I will stand up as the underdog and take on the huge odds against me. Well, what's important about this, and what differentiates the David story from a lot of these stories that I mentioned, is that David does not have a particular technique or a special weapon or reason why he could defeat the Philistine. I mean, he doesn't even have any weapons. He doesn't have any armor. He doesn't have any experience. It's not even close. He will certainly be slaughtered. Or if you want to use the language of the time, his flesh will be left for the birds of the air. And what does it say? The dogs. This is how they talk to each other, both David and the Philistine. Yeah, the beasts of the field and the birds of the air will chew him up. So is David insane? I mean, has he lost his mind? What is he doing walking onto a battlefield with this guy? He is putting his confidence in the Lord. And this is the reason why this story is inspiring to us, because his weapon, so to speak, is the power of God. He's not relying on any natural force. And this is what he says to the Philistine. He says, you come against me with your sword and your spear and your scimitar, weapons of war. He even has an armor bearer, the Philistine, could carry his shield for him, or I don't know, carry his weapons for him. And David says, you come against me with these weapons of war, I come against you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel that you have insulted. So I have right on my side, I have God on my side, and that's the reason why I'm confident I can win. It's a It's a declaration of faith. It's not a declaration that I can beat you. It's that God can beat you. And then he very confidently says, on this very day, I'm going to cut you down, I'm going to cut off your head. And not only that, your whole army is going to be wiped out, and the whole army is going to be left for the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. It's a very, very confident statement. This is David's greatness, right? He has a heart for the Lord. Remember, he's already been anointed. He's already been chosen. Maybe he didn't know what that meant, but he knew that God was on his side. And the battle takes place very simply. If you look at the details, this Philistine has not even taken his sword out of its sheath. At the end, when he cuts off his head, the sword is still in the sheath. As if he's saying, this isn't even a challenge. I'm just standing here. I could probably just punch him and knock him down. And David pulls up his sling. Now, the Marian interpretation of this is that the five smooth stones are the five decades of the rosary. You probably have heard that. The five smooth stones, five decades of the rosary, and the rosary is a very powerful spiritual weapon. You're not going to be able to beat anybody with a rosary. I mean, physically. You might be able to drive away a cat or something, but you can't beat any powerful army physically with a rosary. But the spiritual power of the rosary draws on the victory of Jesus Christ and the magnification or the reflection of that mystery in the heart of Mary. Go back to that cosmic analogy. That's why it's so powerful. So David defeats the Philistine. He defeats Goliath completely. Cuts off his head with his own sword. He uses his own arrogance against him. That's why it's inspiring to us. Now, we don't honor David as a saint like we honor Saint Anthony, but it's along the same order. What makes the saints so inspiring? Their confidence in God. Their willingness to depend on God. St. Anthony abandoned everything and went into the wilderness and lived a very ascetical, selfless life for the Lord. Did he think that he had the power to defeat evil spirits? No. But he was able to do battle against them because he relied on the Lord. And this is the story of every saint. Of every spiritual warrior, anyone who relies on himself and his natural powers and his natural weapons will be defeated because we are up against enemies that are way stronger than we are. One demon is stronger than all of us. And there's a lot of demons and Satan himself. And so it's no contest. We can't beat them. But God can beat them. The power of God overcomes evil. That we can declare with great confidence. It's absolutely true. What happens to us in the battle? Well, it depends on whether we're relying on God or not. And it doesn't mean that we won't be killed. I mean, that's the story of the martyrs. But it does mean that the victory of God is our victory. And that's why we can confidently march into battle with nothing but a rosary and nothing but a spiritual weapon. Okay, that's the main thing I want to talk about. I haven't gotten to the gospel, but let me just point out one detail from the gospel that I always find powerful. That is when Jesus gets the silent treatment from the Pharisees. The Pharisees want to see him do a miracle, and he knows that they've got this serious spiritual problem. So he gets this man with the withered hand to stand up, and he asks them, "Well, is it lawful to do good? Is it lawful to save life on the Sabbath?" And they don't say anything. They think they can save themselves from any accusation. If I don't say anything, you can't accuse me of saying anything wrong. So they just are silent. And what strikes me about this, and I mention this probably every year, is Jesus' reaction to that is anger and grief. Anger and grief. Looking around at them with anger and grieved at their hardness of heart, Jesus said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." I love this because it's an example of the right use of human emotion. We tend to have anger tends to have a bad reputation because it's so often used wrongly. But when it's used rightly, it's a very powerful thing. when it's submitted to right order, it's submitted to God, it's a very powerful thing. So Jesus is angry. Why is he angry? He has a right to be angry because there's an injustice being done here. Evil is being allowed to reign right in the synagogue. This poor man is not being cared for. He's being used as a tool against him. There's a lot of reasons to be angry, justly angry. Now, anger is to be used constructively, not destructively. It's very powerful. We all know anger. And Jesus uses his anger to cure the man. So, okay, I'll show you. He didn't punch them in the face. He shows them what love does. He shows them what it means to do good rather than evil, to save life rather than to destroy it. This is what it looks like. I'm going to put it right in your face. The other reaction he has is grief. We know anger and we know grief. And they tend to cripple us rather than empower us. But in fact, we see them working properly in the life of Jesus. We can learn that, no, anger can be used rightly and grief can be used rightly. Grief moves us or helps us take the side of the suffering. We know what it feels like. We can't really have compassion unless we ourselves know what it's like to suffer. Because that's what compassion is, to suffer with someone. So the grief moves him also to take the side of the man with the withered hand and to save him. Now it doesn't work. I mean, the man gets healed, but the Pharisees, they just are driven further into their disorder, and that's the sad possibility. But for us, I just want to place before our hearts the great example of St. Anthony, the great example of David, the great use of human emotion for the kingdom of God, because this is for all of us. We are all called to be spiritual warriors, not because there's anything strong about us, but because we have been entrusted with the power of grace, the power of Jesus Christ. We have Mary and the saints on our side, and so nothing is impossible for us.